This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. The jazz world lost two very talented, very different musicians late last week, trumpeter Red Rodney and guitarist Sonny Chirac. We're going to remember each of them with excerpts of their Fresh Air interviews. Red Rodney went on the road when he was still a teenager and played in the bands of Claude Thornhill, Gene Krupa, and Woody Herman. In 1949, he ended up in the place just about every young jazz musician wanted to be, Charlie Parker's band. Parker hired him to replace Miles Davis. After Rodney left the band, his jazz career floundered, in part because of his drug habit. But he made a comeback in the 70s and kept recording and performing around the world. He died Friday of lung cancer at his home in Boynton Beach, Florida. He was 66. I spoke with Red Rodney in June of 1990. Now, you started off playing in big bands. How did you first hear Bob and start playing it yourself?
Well, I had already been with a lot of the named bands because the war was on and all of the good trumpet players were drafted. And I was working in the house band of Atlantic City Steel Pier when all those bands came in, minus one or two trumpets. So they needed people like me. And I remember Dizzy took me up to New York one Sunday, sat me in the middle of the Three Deuces and to hear his band, and I heard Charlie Parker. It was like a religious experience. I was completely overwhelmed. I remember leaving that place 4 o'clock in the morning and walking around like I didn't know what to do, where to go, how to think, but I knew what I wanted to do for the rest of my life. That's how powerful that affected me.
Well, Charlie Parker eventually hired you to replace Miles Davis. Did you feel prepared for that?
Not really. No, I told him, too. I told him I really wasn't ready for that. And he said, well, let me be the judge of that. He said, I know a good trumpet player when I hear one, and I think you are ready, and you'll be more ready once you come. And, of course, I grabbed it. I often say that was like going to college and graduate school, the 3.5 years I played with him.
Did Parker take you under his wing in addition to taking you into his band?
Well, I don't know about that. We were very friendly even before that. And, of course, we became more friendly when I was working for him. I was thrilled that a man like that could like me. I don't think I liked myself very much, but I was really thrilled that he did. And I guess you might say he took me under his wing a little bit, yeah. Of course, when he saw that I was trying to emulate him, he protested violently.
Emulate him in which way?
Well, in his drug use. And, he got very, very upset, and of course he didn't like it at all.
Did you start using heroin as a way to emulate him? Is that what it was about?
Yes, I was very immature, and I kept looking and looking and saying, oh my God, if I cross that line, could I possibly play like that? Curiosity killed the cat, you know. And pretty soon, you wind up with a little habit. You don't play any better. In fact, you don't really live up to your potential because you have to be healthy to play well. And there it is. It took me years to get away from it.
Mm-hmm. One of the celebrated stories in jazz lore is a story that was also recounted in the movie Bird, and that's the story of how during one of your tours through the South with Charlie Parker, He knew that an integrated band wouldn't go over well in the segregated South, that there were places you wouldn't be allowed to play. So he had the band advertised as Charlie Parker with albino red. So you were passed off as a black albino. This is a true story, right?
Yes, it is. We didn't fool anybody.
Uh-huh.
Everybody was very nice. And he had me sing a blues, and like the kid in the movie did. I think I sang better than that, though.
So. Is the story true that you ended up moving to a white hotel and Parker said, I'll come with you, you could call me your valet?
Yeah, and they didn't show that in the movie. They should have, because that was hilarious. It would have been much better than the story they put in there in a hotel where he asked me to kick him in his rear end, and that never happened.
So tell me the valet story.
Well, after about a week or 10 days, we were in Atlanta, and I saw this big, beautiful hotel, and I said, you know, I'm going to go check in there. I'm going to take a bath. I'm sorry, but I'm doing this. He says, that's a good idea, and I can go with you as your valet. And I thought he was crazy, but he knew the South. If any white man at that time would register and say, John Jones and valet, they would not question it, and they'd give the valet a room along with him. And that's what happened. I remember him trying to send me downstairs to get cigarettes and newspaper. I said, no, you got to go down. You're the valet.
Let me play something that you recorded with Parker. Let's hear Parker's composition, Blues for Alice. And would you like to say anything about your memories of this recording session?
Well, that particular session, I was playing in the Jewish Alps, the Catskill Mountains. And all of a sudden, I got a phone call. Well, I'm in the swimming pool, and he said, you better get down here quickly. Norman Granz is doing a record date with us. And told me the studio, and I said, I'll be right down. Well, it took three, four hours to get there. But I made it, and that was it. That was the Blues for Alice Swedish Schnapps date. I think it's called Swedish Schnapps, the album. At least originally it was.
Uh-huh. So this is Charlie Parker with Red Rodney on trumpet, John Lewis at the piano, Ray Brown on bass, Kenny Clark drums. Trumpeter Red Rodney died on Friday. We'll hear more of our 1990 interview with Rodney after this break. This is Fresh Air. Back with more of our interview with the late trumpeter Red Rodney. You spent a good part of the 1960s in showbiz, playing in Vegas bands. Why did you end up leaving jazz and going to Vegas?
Well, I had children. I was straightening my life out. Mm-hmm. And Vegas, you made a good living. You played in the hotel showroom orchestras. You worked 3 hours a day, and you made $600-$800 a week, which is a very good salary, especially for then. The only unfortunate thing is there's no jazz at all. It was strictly showbiz. And eventually my jazz roots had to catch up to me. When my kids grew and left and went out on their own, I came right back to New York and came right back into jazz. And I've been very happy ever since.
What kind of shows did you play for in Vegas?
Well, I worked in the Flamingo for many years, and then the Hilton. I played Frank Sinatra. I played Tom Jones. I played so many. a lot of the big name stars. I played French Reviews at another hotel there. And all things that you really don't like doing. But the living out there is very good if you're not a gambler. Living in the desert was beautiful. It's a nice place to retire to, really. It's very inexpensive. The taxes are very low. However, there's no jazz. And there probably never will be when, you know, the people that go there for the gambling and a big extravaganza, the Hollywood-type shows. These people listen to music with their feet instead of their ears.
When you decided to go back to New York and get back into jazz, how did you start?
I went with George Wein. He called me, and it was 1974, and took me to Europe on a tribute to Charlie Parker, the musical life of Charlie Parker. I did that tour. When that tour was finished, I stayed there and lived in Copenhagen for about almost 2 years. I lived in Copenhagen, but I worked all over Europe, and that got me back into the jazz market. And living in Copenhagen was very nice. And, of course, there's lots of work in Europe for an American jazz musician of some standing. However, I no longer had to be away from America, and I missed it terribly. I really wanted to come back. This is my home, and I love it. So I just picked up and came home.
Was it hard for you to start playing jazz again? I mean, did you have to get back in the swing of things?
You have to get back a little bit, sure. You just can't pick up your horn and start doing it. That period in Europe was very good for me because I was working quite a bit. I was getting all my thoughts together. And when I got back to America, I was in good shape. I was better than I had ever been. In fact, my best years musically have been between the ages of 50 and 62. You know, after I straightened my life out, the jazz profession is very, very forgiving. As long as you can play, and as long as they see that you're okay, you're welcomed back like nothing ever happened. So I've been very lucky. And I would hope that the other people who straighten up become as lucky as I did.
Red Rodney died of lung cancer on Friday at the age of 66. This is Fresh Air.